Call the February 4th, 2020 regular meeting of the Planning Commission to order. The first item of business is introductions. We'll begin with our Vice Chairperson, Commissioner Phillips.
Joe Phillips, North Kitsap.
Aaron Murphy, North Kitsap.
Richard Shattuck, Central Kitsap.
Jim Swenson, South Kitsap.
Amy Mall, North Kitsap.
Ed Galloway, South Kitsap.
And Mike Eliason, Central Kitsap. We have a quorum of members. The next item of business is adoption of the agenda. Are there any additions or corrections? And let me begin by stating the staff has requested that we switch items E and F and reverse them so that we would begin the deliberations and recommendations on the comp plan amendment update first, and then followed by Port Gamble. And that's to accommodate the commission schedule. One thing to keep in mind under the rules of procedure is, unlike the quorum requirement for comp plan amendments, you have to have 5 affirmative votes to pass any motion. So it's imperative that we keep as many people, particularly since we have 1 vacancy and Commissioner Allen's not here this evening. Are there any other additions or corrections? Hearing none, entertain a motion to approve the agenda as corrected with switching E and F.
I so move.
Second. Second. We have a motion and second. All those in favor, please say aye and raise your right hand.
Aye. Aye.
All those opposed? Motion carries. Item C, approval of January 21st, 2020 minutes. Unfortunately, meeting minutes are not available tonight. We will defer those until the next regular meeting. The next item of business is general comment. This is the public's opportunity to present testimony to the commission about any matter that's not included in tonight's meeting agenda. If you have any comments about Port Gamble legislative amendments, please wait until we get to that particular agenda item. And then please keep in mind, too, that the public comment period regarding the 2019 comprehensive plan amendments has concluded, and the commission cannot accept any additional testimony about these amendments. Anyone wishing to provide general comments is invited to please come forward. Mr. Brown. And for the record, if you could please state your name, your general area of residence.
Okay.
And please spell your name, although I'm sure we can do Brown.
For the record, my name is Richard A. Brown. I've been in the real estate business in Kitsap County for 50 years, a little over 50 years now. I developed property, built houses, built apartments, and did approximately 12 to 15 plats, sold hundreds of short plats. Jim Swenson and I worked for quite a few years together, and I'm here to tell you the real estate market is collapsing. And what does that mean? That means that an average worker in the Navy Yard and up to an E6 in the Navy will no longer be able to buy a house here. That is happening now. So we have to take drastic stands on making sure that we get the existing plats that are under consideration to market, not 1 year, not 2 years, not 3 years, but immediately on the market. If not, then what is going to happen is those houses in Bremerton and low-income houses in Port Orchard will be sold off, and there won't be any low-income rentals. Plus, as you noticed in last week's paper, Kitsap County Housing Authority is moving to Shelton because they can't buy land here cheap enough because the urban growth boundaries are too small. And if the Kitsap County Commissioners won't listen, then you have to, because you're witnessing a decrease in the market severely, so severely that we will not be able to solve it. I've got a chart here. I don't know if you put it. And this is the inventory over a period of time. And if you'll notice, the inventory is decreasing and the amount of sales are going up. We're looking at the median price range house at being over $400,000. The square footage price runs from about $200 a square foot now to $220 a square foot. Headed for $250 a square foot. When it hits $300 a square foot in an 1,800 square foot house, that is $500,000. What are we going to do for the bottom of the market? You, as Planning Commission members, do not be swayed by the staffs telling you, oh, everything is okay and everything's going to work. It isn't working. Growth management has never worked anywhere it's been tried, period. It's inconceivable that you decrease the amount of inventory that it doesn't increase the price. So I would highly suggest that you take a hard look at yourself to say, where is your daughter and son and grandkids going to live? Because they're not going to live here if we don't do something. And I'm not exaggerating. No one has studied this market longer and harder than I have, period. I'm 80 years old now, a little shaky tonight. But so I'm encouraging you to take a hard look at what staff tells you. I'm not against staff. I'm just saying that they're beholden to people outside of this county. You're beholden to the taxpayers and the voters of this county. And so is the county commissioners. I didn't want to belabor the...
Sorry, I forgot to announce the time limits.
Time
limit. Can you go ahead and summarize?
Pardon?
I'll give you time to summarize because I didn't announce the three
minutes. I'm just going
to
say, in December in Kitsap County, there were 7,734 houses. There were 6,142 sales. In January, there were 6,894 listings for sale, and there was 4,175 sales, leaving 2,700 houses. So we're selling about 5,000 houses a month. And I'm not sure what we do. In the old days, you had margin. When we did streets like Jackson Avenue, well, the lots were $2,950. Now they're $80,000. A short plot I'm just finishing cost $18,000 to get through the planning staff. So I just take that in consideration. Now a five-acre parcel that used to sell for like $80,000 is selling for $150,000 and $160,000. So we need to increase the urban growth boundaries to take the pressure off the marketplace, and we need to get plats to market. Thank you very much.
Great. Thank you, Mr. Brown. Are there any other members of the public wishing to speak? Please come forward. Again, state your name and your general area residence. And due to our time limitations tonight, we're going to limit you to 3 minutes or less, please. Thank you.
For the record, my name is William M. Palmer. I'm speaking tonight as president of the Kitsap Alliance of Property Owners Organization. I have written comments, so I'll try not to dwell on all the points as you'll be able to read them. Some of what I'm presenting is an augmentation to what Dick Brown just presented. But I thought I would give you the statistics, I guess, of what the cost of housing is in Kitsap County and whether or not our median income households can afford it. And the general comment I will make is that our median income families cannot afford the cost of housing. Dick Brown said 400,000. The marketplace right now is 340,000, but even in the month of January, we started to see that increase to about 370,000 for a median priced house. And maybe in a few sales have pushed it up to 390,000. Okay, bottom line, our median income family cannot afford much more than $300,000 to $320,000 house. And I ran those statistics out with interest rates of 4.5% and 5%. And also made some allowance for down payments, conventional financing versus FHA versus VA financing. And if you add all the other costs like insurance and taxes, even the low numbers go up to a point where they can barely afford even a $340,000 house. The real issue is, what do we do about it? And I'm suggesting that the policies that are in a comprehensive plan, A, ignore the Federal Housing Act of 1968. They don't deal with minority, or plan and policies don't deal with minorities. They don't deal with low income. And they offer no solutions other than policies for what to do about it. I'm suggesting as a bottom line that this body, the Planning Commission, with the assistance or the cooperation of the home builders and our organization, could begin to develop some strategies for what to do about it. The rest of what I have to say is in my letter, and you each have a copy of it. Thank you.
Great. Thank you, Mr. Palmer. Any other members wish to address the commission? Okay, please come forward. Mr. Frank Tweeten, correct?
Yes, it is. Yep.
Hi, my name is Frank Tweeten. I live down on Beach Drive in Port Orchard. And I'm here listening to these guys. They're trying to build some houses and infill it because we don't have enough houses. And I met with the DCD and the Planning Department in 2017, and I have a piece of property in the Manchester Village commercial area that a subcommittee of the MCAC decided that it would be best suited to take all the residential density out of the commercial core of downtown Manchester. And they zoned my property to have a tavern and on Spring Street, and that's a residential neighborhood. I couldn't consciously build a tavern there. I've been in that business for long enough to know that that doesn't belong there. But I'm trying to put a couple of $1 million worth of real estate on the tax rolls, and I don't know what other logic somebody has or this body has that says, you know, we don't want people living there. You know, they're talking about affordable houses. Well, if I can only build one house on a 16,000 square foot lot in the commercial village, well, I got a little ranchette down there that's, you know, doesn't really benefit the community at all, and I'm trying to infill it, and I need some residential density in the commercial district of Manchester, and I'm trying to get it so that we could do that in 2020, and I started in 2017, and like Dick says, these decisions are made by people who are just sitting here, and it's like, you know what, that makes sense. How many more times do you got to stand up in front of the microphone here to get some reasonable resolution to a piece of property that's best suited as a neighborhood development? Anyway, I'll quit now and leave my time to somebody else. Thank you.
Thank you. Anybody else? General comment? Hearing none, we'll move to the next agenda item. Item E. Deliberations and Recommendations, 2019 Comprehensive Plan Amendment Update. Mr. Peter Best.
Yes, thank you. Good evening. For the record, my name is Peter Best, Senior Long Range Planner for Kitsap County Department of Community Development. Just so I understand our timing, I understand there's some early departure. Can I get a sense of when we need to wrap up?
My goal is 6:30 based on other commitments.
Okay. So for that, I'll do an introduction and then likely move the Dickey Pitt site-specific amendment earlier in the sequence. Okay. So we can maintain maximum quorum for each amendment.
So is the program tonight then go to start with the site-specific, get that done, so recruit some stuff now, so we've got a quorum to deal with that issue, and then...
So I'll do an introduction, and then if there's any general questions about procedure or comments and issues that were raised generally, I'm happy to entertain those, and then we'll move into the amendments and start with the site-specific just so we can make sure we get maximum quorum.
Okay.
That sounds good. Okay. And then also just to highlight here for folks, we'll be coming back on the – sorry, that – back on the 18th to adopt the findings of fact. So tonight what we'll be doing is any relevant discussion regarding findings should be had tonight so we can draft the document appropriately, and then it can be refined and adopted on the 18th. And then we will begin a work study with the Board of County Commissioners on February 26th. So there were two questions. These are written in your packet, but there were two outstanding questions from our previous work study regarding the Dickey Pit site-specific amendment. So just to address these quickly, there was a question about contamination on an old mine site, and there has been a Phase 1 environmental assessment done that has come out clean on that. And then the other question was regarding the Silverdale Regional Growth Center, regarding how much vacant land there is and the market factor used in the county's land capacity analysis methods for that. A statistic regarding vacant land is not readily available in existing documents, but I'll show you a map in a moment that captures what the 2016 comp plan is based on that visually represents vacant and underutilized land. But a corollary to that is the 20-year population growth capacity within the regional growth center, which is about 2,000 people, or equating that to dwellings, it's about 800 to 1,000 dwellings inside the regional growth center. And the market factor, which for folks who don't know what that arcane term means, is it's basically an assumption about the percentage of developable land that will not be likely on the market for development within the 20-year period that the comprehensive plan is projecting out. And so we don't have a specific factor for the regional growth center, but for countywide, we apply factors for residential zones at 5% for vacant land and 15% for underutilized land. And then for commercial and industrial zones, it's 20% for vacant, 25% for underutilized. And that map is representing the entire Silverdale urban growth area. The red boundary is the regional growth center within the UGA. You can see the yellow and the orange are underutilized lands. This means that there's some development there, but it's not up to what the assumptions are in the land capacity analysis. And then the green shades are vacant. And you can see that there's, when the 2016 comp plan was being prepared, there's quite a bit of vacant and underutilized land throughout the UGA. And again, about 2,000 people capacity estimated within the regional growth center. So our comment period closed on the 22nd of January. We received a total of 66 comments. Most of those, including the public hearing testimony that you received, were about the Dickey Pit site-specific amendment. Second with the downtown Kingston amendment. From that, staff identified issues, that themes and issues that ran through the comments. Identified 38 of those, and for three amendments, we have identified 9 potential changes to consider, which were presented in your packets. You had the full matrix of all of the issues, staff responses, and what the changes correlated to those were, as well as the entire original comments that were submitted online via email and other forms, as well as testimony summarized.
Commissioner Shattuck?
Can we go back to the Silverdale map for a minute, Peter?
Yes.
Okay. And so I'm not sure what the data was, but I'm looking, for example, at West Hill. Mm-hmm. That was all downzoned to rural or urban residential restricted in 2016. I'm looking at the map. It shows underutilized commercial land. Mm-hmm. So where's the data coming from for this map?
Got it. So this was this is preceding the adoption of the 2016 comp plan. So this does not adjust for that down zone for West Hills. So that's just
we're looking at something pre-2016 and making a decision for the 2020 or 19 amendments.
So we do not have an updated land capacity analysis that's typically run in advance of that 8-year update. We anticipate running it more frequently in the future, but we don't have an updated set at this point. So this was the most recent information that I have access to and that informs what the 2016 amendment was based on. It doesn't account for changes that were made in the 2016 amendment.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah. So I'm not going to go into a lot of detail of all the comments and the issues. You had those in your packet. I'm perfectly happy to spend as much time as you want answering questions or discussing particular issues that were identified there. But the rest of my presentation will focus more on the changes to consider when we get to the amendments. So as far as deliberation tonight, comp plans are always a little bit tricky because they have to be considered as a batch, but they're kind of apples and oranges sometimes. So the department's suggestion to try to keep the parliamentary part of this pretty straightforward is to consider the three amendments where we received none or favorable comments and there were no issues identified as one group. But you're perfectly welcome to split those out individually as well. But then for the ones where we do have issues and changes to consider, consider those as three separate items. So in total, there would be four main motions to consider for this agenda item. Further, we recommend starting deliberations with the main motion for each one of those, that group or separate amendment. These are some examples of what that language might look like to start it off cleanly. And then if there's a motion to proceed, I'm happy to introduce what the proposed changes to consider are and answer any questions you might have during discussion, provide information that's helpful. And then changes to the amendment would be made by motions to amend the main motion. There's draft language there for you to consider. Each one of those motions to amend would need to be voted on. And then we'd return back to the main motion. That's clear as mud. And during discussion, if there's anything specific to note regarding findings of fact, that's the opportunity to address that. And in a handout before you tonight is a summary of this recommended procedure as well as the findings of fact. So your decisions under Kitsap County Code are bound by these three sections of code. The first is that the amendments have to satisfy the applicable decision criteria, which were analyzed in the staff reports. The second is that it has to be consistent with the community vision statement, goals, objectives, and policy directives of the comprehensive plan, and preserve the integrity of the comprehensive plan and assure its systemic execution. So fairly general threshold there. And additionally, for the Planning Commission recommendation, we need to find that it's supported by the Capital Facilities Plan, again, consistent with the Growth Management Act, countywide planning policies, and the comp plan reflects local circumstances and bears a substantial relationship to the public general health, safety, morals, and welfare. This section of code also has a requirement for when there are map changes, and the only amendment tonight that has a map change is the Dickey Pit site specific, so that's why it's noted here just for clarity, and that also requires a finding and conclusion that it's justified by changed or changing conditions. Would not create an isolated land use designation or spot zoning and will be compatible with neighboring properties and not adversely affect the value of those properties. So that's all from the comp plan amendment process in Kitsap County Code. So for reference, those are in front of you, and if there's any discussion regarding those, that can be had, and if there's any questions, I can provide information relative to those.
Great.
Are there any questions at this point about procedure or general questions.
And I will mention, the slide's no longer there, but you guys probably saw it in the executive summary on page 3 of 4, it outlines the potential motions that you could make for each amendment, top of page 3 in the executive summary.
And on the slides that you have are, is this, that also has language for motions.
If I could ask one procedural issue, and I understand the batching requirements, but I wanted to find out under WAC 365/196/640, evaluating the cumulative effects. At what point have we done our due diligence as a commission evaluating, because we have those in each individual, mm-hmm. but do we, and I think the statute or the WAC mentioned that usually it's in the SEPA process. Did we, in the original adoption many months ago, and I couldn't find the document, actually outline in that SEPA what the cumulative effects of all these projects are, or how do we evaluate that this evening?
Right, so the requirement, to the best of my recollection, is to the extent that they're related to each other, what the cumulative effects of that is. So in the staff reports and under the SEPA, we have considered that and specifically found whether they're related or not related and
in each one.
Effect on okay. cumulative effects, yes.
Great.
So as far as tonight goes, if there are any findings or discussion relative to how these interact with each other to that extent, that's relevant.
Great. Any questions for Mr. Best? Okay, we'll entertain a motion on the start with the Dickey Pit, site specific.
Mr. Chair, before we start with that, under Washington's appearance of fairness or doctrine, I need to recuse myself with regard to the site-specific request on Dickey Pit. So I will remove myself from the dais at this point and be back later.
Good. Thank you. Speaking of which, while he's moving, I wanted to find out, the public hearings are either legislative or quasi-judicial. And I've read quite a bit about it, but I want a clarification from staff in this particular case. Most rezones are quasi-judicial, but in this case, we're approaching it from a legislative perspective, correct? Because it is maybe site-specific, but it's part of the batch of the comp plan amendments, right?
Correct.
So the appearance of fairness and some of these other documents have a little bit different applicability on legislative. But okay, I wanted to find out. Great, thanks. Okay, commissioners? Is there any proposed motion on the Dickey Pit to at least start the discussion? So again, on page 3, the staff's recommendation, you would either move to recommend adoption of the amendment as proposed, and if that's the umbrella, then there could be subsequent amendments amending that, and same thing, you could move to recommend denial of the amendment, and then we'd proceed forward.
For purposes of initiating discussion, I move that the staff recommendation be approved to deny this request.
Okay. We have a motion to accept the staff's recommendation and deny the request. Dickey Pitt, is there a second to the motion?
Second.
Okay, we have a motion and second. We'll open it up to discussion.
Mr. Chairman, I have some concerns. I feel the staff report makes a pretty compelling case for denial, but one area of my concern deals with compatibility with adjoining land uses, in particular the asphalt plant, rock crusher, and surface mine currently being operated as Pyramid Materials, formerly Ace Paving Company, which abuts the subject property immediately to the south. Mm-hmm. The batch plant is located very close to the south boundary of the property in question at an elevation considerably higher than the property we're talking about. In the materials provided by the applicant, they indicate that noise implications can be handled by buffers and perhaps notice to title or agreements that people who buy residential units or businesses in this 130-acre site, of which I believe 78 acres proposed as neighborhood commercial and 60 as residential, that the incompatibility with this existing facility can be handled later through conditioning of a project. When I was working for the county, admittedly decades ago, the county adopted its first noise ordinance, and we dealt with noise complaints on a regular basis. It's my understanding that the asphalt batch plant that is, like I say, very close to the south boundary of this property in question, sounds like a jet engine when you start it up. At least they used to. Maybe they've gotten a little quieter. But on a busy day, they need to be fired up early in the morning. And there are also odor considerations. We heard a little testimony at our last meeting from a resident in the general area about noise and odor issues when the wind was right and that sort of thing. But it's my view that if a few hundred residential units and now 78 acres, that's 1.5 Kitsap malls worth of neighborhood commercial, are approved, that's going to make life for the operators of this adjoining business more difficult, more challenging. They are one of very few suppliers of WSDOT approved aggregates and paving materials, and they, I believe it's valuable to have a facility like that in the county. It's been a legally operating facility for decades, and the gentleman, Mr. Costello, I believe, who owns it, wrote a letter indicating that they intend to operate for the foreseeable future. But one of my concerns about this proposal is addressed in the staff report is that this proposal that's before us, which is a comp plan change at this point, but the applicant does have a fairly specific indication of how they would like to develop the property, that creates some compatibility issues that really haven't been adequately addressed. In the compatibility arena, we also have Apex Air Park, which is, I guess, referred to by state regulations as a general aviation airport. I saw information in the file that we were provided that indicates that there's about 50 light aircraft based there. And maybe it's a typo, but what I read was 19,000 operations a year of takeoffs and landings. There are, it's not just noise issues, but there's safety navigation easement issues that do appear to impact this property that I also believe may not have been adequately addressed at this point. But I'm just bringing this up to reinforce my motion to uphold the staff recommendation, because I think there's some critical issues. Also, traffic is a significant issue with regard to this application and potential conflicts with the school bus barn, the school, the county transfer station, the trucks going in and out of this aggregate facility, and the need for a connector between Willamette Meridian Road and Dickey Road, which is apparently in the county road plan. But those are the kinds of issues where the record states, well, we don't address that at this time because this is a non-project action. So these are factors that have convinced me to support the staff recommendation.
Right. Thank you, Commissioner. Any other comments about the motion? And I'll note, too, under the rules of procedure, was adopted by the Board of County Commissioners, we're obligated to vote on every motion. We can't abstain unless there's a conflict with the bylaws, or like in the case of Commissioner Shattuck, if there's a recusal from vote. Any other comments?
I thought a lot about and really appreciate the homework that's been done on both sides of this argument. But I, For me, I think it's just a function of what are we really trying to decide for today. Any developer, anybody in the industry of creating, doesn't matter. Commercial office building, asphalt plant, houses, it's a process, right? And there's a lot of, I don't know if safety nets is the right word at all, but there's a lot of steps, right? We just heard how long it takes to get a plat, and that's a whole other discussion. But my point to what are we here to decide today versus what gets solved down the road, and we heard some pretty good argument for us having a lack of low-income housing. Maybe the picture that the developer brought to us for the site, maybe they made a mistake using the word Seabrook, right? If it's by an airport and an asphalt plant, do you think it'll end up like Seabrook? I don't know, but it really doesn't matter today. Today, I think the question is what the recommendations coming out of DCD reflect what some people might state you should let the market decide? And it's not what we're talking about today. Is there a need that our county has that if we're not expanding UGAs, and whether it has to do with staff, whether it has to do with state coming down on us, and everybody can say that their hands are held, what can we do regarding today's decision in its infancy and infiniteness that has nothing to do with what might get built there in 3 years? What's our obligation as far as, is it an opportunity? Is it a hindrance? Is it that? For me, that's all I'm trying to look at for today. So,
thank you, Commissioner. Any other comments?
Well, and I would like to add to that right now, we're given a choice of no action and nothing starts, or we ask the staff and everybody to go back and see what we can work out here, because it seems like somebody came forward, they're looking for a zoning change. It isn't approval of a development or anything like that. It's just moving from an industrial area into a more developable type of zone. So that's how I see our choices.
Okay. Any other comments?
Yeah, I guess I feel convinced that the area immediately adjacent to the existing active mine is probably not appropriate for residential or neighborhood commercial development. But I don't feel entirely comfortable completely writing off the proposal because of that. I feel like I'm concerned that we do potentially have a housing shortage, and that writing off this proposal is not helping anything, that there might be a compromise that would allow us to move in the right direction and address a lot of the concerns. And the staff report includes some suggestions for changes that might make the proposal more acceptable. And I wonder whether those suggestions go far enough. But I think that it's worth considering approval with those suggestions or potentially additional suggested changes to the plan that might involve fewer of the parcels being rezoned. I guess I'm not comfortable with a blanket yes or a blanket no at this point.
Commissioner Galloway, you have any comments?
I echo that. I feel like, for me, there's some opportunity here. I echo some of the concerns brought up by the other members, the other commissioners. I wouldn't want to live next to a asphalt plant, you know, myself, per se. So would be interested in knowing what kind of mitigation opportunities there are around stuff like that and the high banks that we're talking about and safety and so forth and so on, smells and environmental. I thought I saw there was the determination on significance was there was no significant impact to the environment. Was I mistaken on that?
It just spoke, with regard to Mr. Best's commentary, it just spoke to the fact that there was not contamination in.
So for me, I had the last hearing we had, jotted down a few questions and they were brought up earlier, but traffic, concurrency, potential issue there with getting in and out of that development and how that's mitigated, utilities, is there water and sewer and, gas and all the utilities that are needed to operate a development such as this. And I guess those become project-specific items. And so I'm in agreement, I think, that those all warrant further study before I'm prepared to say with reasonable certainty yes or no.
Okay.
Commissioner Murphy. May I again?
Yep.
Completely agree, and we heard somebody make a comment about it taking a half an hour to go a half a mile or what, right, whatever it was, and he's up in that area. Well, that also means, and we've been well trained, I've been on commission long enough to know that we've been trained not to create islands of zoning, and I think as we've gone through growth management related stuff, we try real hard not to do that. But it also means that the guy lives in a house up there somewhere, right? Across the street, eighth of a mile, okay? He's seen a plane take off from Apex. He's probably smelled the asphalt when the wind blew the wrong way. You don't have to live there, but maybe an E3 in the Navy wants home ownership, right? That's my only comment about, I honestly could, my gut, having been to a Seabrook and having been to the plant site, I don't know. I just feel like it's silly with what we're actually tasked with today to shoot it in the foot based on what the market's telling us we're doing to ourselves right in the middle of it all.
Any other comments? Okay. Commissioner Galloway mentioned about the SEPA criteria. If you go to page 6 of the executive briefing, and it says the department notified the applicant that a SEPA determination of a significance was likely regarding the following areas of concern, and there are 5 bullet points. Population growth capacity exceeding adopted planning target, urban service deficiencies, land use compatibility with adjacent areas, reduction of industrial land inventory, and then the employment growth capacity following below adopted planning target. I don't know about you guys, I guess I've just had plenty of free time. Even during the Super Bowl, I logged into the county email during the break because they were down. It was 20-10, and I thought, game's over. Boy, was I wrong. And I logged in checking emails, and I read and reread, and I think there were 293 pages of testimony. It all wasn't Dickie Pitt, but I do my best to read through everything and then digest it too, right? It's not like reading a novel. It's highly technical. You have to weigh and give greater weight to different areas. And then you got to be drawn back, like Commissioner Murphy said, what are we deciding right here? There were a lot of areas of the project that were a concern to me, but those are project specific, like the applicant noted, that can be decided, that has some relevance in regard to the zoning, but at the same time, those are things that can be ironed out. We even know through this process that the applicant has tried to accommodate a few of the issues that come up during testimony regarding the connection with Willamette Meridian, with the fire district annexation, the no protest letter, and some of those things. So I think there's some good compromise there. And as I kept researching, though, I kept going back to what is the criteria, because again, the comp plan was adopted in 2016, and even though I've spent the last 15, 16 years of my life as the CEO of the Realtors advocating housing, opportunities. And as important as that is, I have a much different role here. And so, you know, you're looking at adoption of the comp plan, looking at state statutes, hearing boards, decisions, et cetera. And if you note in the decision criteria on page 7, we have to, whether we adopt a motion to recommend or recommend to the commissioners that they approve it or reject it, we have to have a basis of that. And the basis is, how do the circumstances related to the amendment or the area in which this property affected by the proposed amendment is located have substantially changed since the adoption of the comprehensive plan or applicable development regulations? And the key word there to me was substantially changed, and it was a process that was 4 years ago. Now, I had a little bit of challenge too, because I even have conflicting reports about when did the mining activity stop. I've heard one of the property owners reference 20 years ago, but in the staff's report, there's been some movement in the last 4 years. And then I wasn't part of the process, but you know, originally it was, you know, pre-GMA, then it was residential, then it got put commercial, now the business purpose is done, and now we have an application before us to reverse it back. And then I weigh too, because we're batching all these together, how do you bring all this stuff together, and I haven't asked the staff, but did the property owner miss their opportunity 4 years ago when we adopted the comp plan? Because we also don't want to open the floodgates to everybody who wants to bring forth an application and do this every year. There's a reason that there are certain stricter criteria on an annual basis versus the 8-year review and versus having a 20-year comp plan. But for me, I very much would like to see a project like this happen, but some overwhelming issues with the population allocation. In fact, the staff put out the graphs, which was very helpful to me, looking at each UGA to see what was adopted. This was a very lengthy process in determining population allocation. It takes a lot of input from the cities, regional coordinating council, etc., and even negotiating about who's going to take which population, and then working with your buildable lands analysis to apply that and make that happen. It's not something that happens overnight, and usually I think the process is pretty good because everybody goes away with getting something and not getting everything they wanted out of it. But that's the basis of developing these comprehensive plans. And according to all those graphs, Silverdale UGA has, in my mind, has two major issues. One is right now we're 4 years into that 20-year agreement, basically with the comp plan, and we're below projections. So if we add, whether it's this rezone or another, we're further combining the problem because we're not hitting that growth target. And then the second issue that the staff has pointed out is that within this UGA, we have, and I can't remember the term, but we have a concentrated area in Silverdale proper that we're not trying to draw away from as well. So that's something that I've considered too, is that, again, the population allocation, the compatibility issues. I appreciate the comments of the commissioners and the debate between the applicant and the staff about what kind of an airport is this. I hate to admit it, I used to be the CEO of a fire district, and I had an airport in my district, and I didn't know as much as I thought I did because I completed a lot of research and know more than I want to know about zones 3 and 6, but those are concerning to me. Although, again, I think the applicant's been making overtures to try work with the county and neighboring property owners on what is going into Zone 3, what's happening in Zone 6, and then also address that 50-foot buffer that the applicant's willing to include between the neighboring properties. So weighing that's a difficulty as well. And then the reduction of the industrial land inventory is an issue too, and you may remember at the previous meeting I brought up the issue of, but it doesn't include South Kitsap Industrial Area or whatever the new name is now. I'm still Skia, whatever it is now. But you still look at the percentages, and then again comparing the comments of the Puget Sound Regional Council, and then the staff told us they have concerns about the methodology. But bottom line is, it still is a pretty significant change in industrial zoning for that 20-year horizon, and keeping in mind, too, the Port of Silverdale has written a letter in opposition, although there's argument about what their interest is in it. And so how do we balance that? Anyway, I got some good direction. I was looking forward to hearing from my fellow commissioners about this issue because I've had a few sleepless nights about it because, and I think I'm going the same direction. I very much would like to see something happen to the property, but I go back to the law and these overarching issues that we have with the population allocation, the adjacent uses, and the inventory of industrial. And how do we resolve that? And at the same time, I'm extremely empathetic because the applicant has been through this process a couple times. It's extremely expensive, multi-year process. And here we are.
I think all I could add to that is just that, yes, it's complex and it's frustrating. No different than it might be frustrating for Mr. Best, who's on staff, to have to put up a slide from 2016 because it's the last data he's got. And then, you know, and in a lot of ways outdated to the, even the discussion, which is frustrating on both sides, right? So, yeah, it's complex and it's difficult that, you know, in a minute it's a yes or a no or with amendment, right? I just find myself on the sleepless side just saying, what's the market telling us, right? Because anything you sell me, well, the sale price is only what the buyer's willing to, you know, purchase it at, and a seller's worth willing to let go of it at, right? That's market-driven information. So malls are being reinvented because they were dead the way they were, right? There's a lot of activity going on. I look at Old Town Silverdale, it's changed, right? There's new buildings there in the last 5 years. But unless you're a hospital, apparently, you know, I'm not seeing that inside the UGA everyone's going to 85 feet tall because that makes sense and it pencils for somebody to actually make money to spend the money to do it. So then I have to look at, okay, well, if the growth boundaries, we're hearing everybody's got their hands tied from the top down, and maybe that's just an easy answer. Where else, what else can we do to help if it needs help?
And although I will say the staff did mention, and I think it was one of the reports, that, you know, the comp plan does contemplate that over a 20-year horizon, you're going to have cyclical markets. There's going to be times when you have exceeding growth. And remember, I mean, we were quite a few years into the recovery when the county adopted the comprehensive plan in 2016, there was a lot of growth then. I don't know that a lot's changed other than we've had shrinking inventory. But there's also a lot of factors, as staff has mentioned, in what created this marketplace. It's not just the GMA, right? Although, in my opinion, it's the biggest factor because it's directly resulting in supply and demand. But there's lots of factors that influence it. But for tonight, back to the underlying issue of the rezone, I pull back to looking at the big overarching issues that we as a commission, if we're recommending one position or the other to the county commissioners, we have to follow that criteria. What has changed substantially since the adoption? And I've read through the applicants, and they make some really great points, but then there's counterpoints by the staff. Whether it's the housing supply and population capacity. I mean, in each criteria, I think the staff has adequately answered whether it fits within the current comp plan and countywide planning policies.
So procedurally.
So right now, go ahead. I was going to say we have a motion.
Understood.
We're speaking to recommend to adopt the staff's recommendation and findings to recommend to the commissioners to deny the Dickey Pit site-specific application.
And does anybody
else have
want to amend that?
Just a quick question about if the board, the commission decides not to approve the staff recommendations, what happens?
So you can take another motion to recommend something different. And if you consider a motion to approve the amendment, there are some revisions to what were drafted as kind of optional conditions of approval, including some responses from what the applicant kind of offered in response to some of the issues. So there are some other things on the table there that could be considered if a motion to deny doesn't succeed.
But I was going to say, too, I think, oh, go ahead.
Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, I think one of the challenges we have, too, is we have a lot of unanswered questions we'd like to get resolution to, but we have timing issues, right? These are batched. This is it. We've got this meeting and then finding a fact next, and then it goes to the commissioners.
Right. There are timing issues, and there's the kind of continual challenge of trying to separate a legislative action versus a project-specific action, right, and how detailed we want to get into some of those issues. And that's always kind of a challenge with these site-specific amendments. So that's one question to ask is that information you might want, can it be addressed at a site-specific issue? Is it relevant to the criteria and the findings that you have to make under the county code?
Could forgive my newness here.
Sorry.
Forgot my question. can we make it a condition, either yes or no, to, for example, if we said yes or approve the rezone, could we attach certain conditions to that would be able to present back to us at a future date that those questions be addressed, studies of sorts or whatever that might be more project specific, I guess is the question.
So I'll take that maybe in two parts. So the first, can you apply conditions of approval on a site specific amendment? Yes, you can. And there's a draft of what those might look like if you were to consider approval. And in the handout that you have tonight on page 3 are some revisions to what was in the staff report as conditions of approval. Right? These were here if you wanted to consider approving the amendment. Right? The department's recommendation is for denial. So at a high level, yes. What the content of those conditions are, though, is important, right? That this is not a project-specific development proposal, so what's conditioned there needs to be relevant to the legislative nature of a rezone and not to a project-specific development proposal. And where the line is between those things is not very precise, but if you get to that point in tonight's deliberations and want to discuss conditions, then we can certainly have that conversation.
Could we attach a condition that is related to the project-specific application? In other words, if future date they come forward with an application to develop something specific, could we attach the approval of the rezone to that future development or the future project proposal?
Can I speak to that prior to? The motion on the table is a blanket acceptance of the denial that the staff is recommending. That has to be voted on before we can discuss a different motion.
Understood. Although I think you were trying to get, were you trying to get clarification and then possibly present an amendment to the motion? So, for example, the staff presented, has its recommendation, but then the staff also gave us optional considerations. I've got page 3 of 4 in my packet, but of course that's
I guess
in the big packet.
I was thinking of an alternate, but so maybe we should close that first and then.
Okay, sure.
So if your thought process is around an alternate presentation of what we should be voting on, we have to get off the one we're voting on now.
Excuse me, sorry.
I think just, I'm only speaking because I've sat here a few years, that's all.
Sure. Commissioner Mall?
So, if we vote to agree with the staff report as written, does that mean that this the proposed rezone is completely dead for this year?
Recommendation of the commissioners, they obviously can either accept it or not.
Right. Okay, so there's no, the applicant can't rework it and continue to present alternatives at that point.
Well, I think we already had the applicant twice, even since the close of public testimony, right, make some suggestions, and I would imagine there might be some further compromise or refining at the commissioner level.
Okay.
Yeah. But again, even tonight, the optional considerations, if the commission decides to go another direction and possibly recommend with, as Commissioner Galloway mentioned, the reference in here about the, having the no protest, a contract for service, addressing the road to Willamette Meridian, that's in our packet. So do you want to go ahead and take a vote on the underlying motion right now?
I think the concern probably across the dais is if we vote that we say yes, do what the staff said, or no, don't do what the staff said, then can we continue with some modification approach today, or is today over? I think that's what's being asked.
Okay, so what I'd suggest is you vote on the motion. If the motion fails, the commission could make a motion to approve and then make amendments to the approval, if that's the direction you choose to go.
So another motion can be made if you're thinking about something that looks different than what's on the table, because Jim said I have to open with something so we can talk.
Right.
Okay.
Any other comments?
If we vote this down without amendments to it, then we have to come up with something that we want done. So we need to think carefully about what, we're proposing here. Because as you read through this, there's been back and forth on what should be done with this area. There are reasonable concerns that I'm sure both sides of this would consider meeting halfway on it and doing the right thing on that. I'm a little concerned that we've tied this thing to a time limit, and it seems like it deserves more time than what has been given to it. The size of it and the site itself is concerning, that we should be, devoting more attention to it.
Okay. Any other comment? Okay, we'll call the vote again. The motion is to accept the staff's recommendation.
Point of order.
Oh, go ahead.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, if I can add just to help inform as far as the process goes. So the recommendation, whatever it is, whether it's this motion or another motion down the road, is to the department, right, and to the board.
Right.
We will take everything that's happened here and the public comment and all of that and prepare a new department recommendation to the board as well as transmit yours exactly as it is. So this discussion can inform that as we pass it on to the board as well. So I wanted to share that with you. Another thing is with these site-specific amendments, part of the challenge that I think you're facing right now is how the process is written and what's being asked of you. And just to note that there is an expectation that we'll be revising this process in 2020. So what we learn from tonight and as we go through these other amendments can help inform that improvement.
And I think Commissioner Phillips, I can echo the frustration. And I know, again, it comes from staff being directed with timelines that they wish they could control and they can't, as far as legalese goes. But I'm in complete agreement that the amount of data that we were given and the time we were asked to review it in is baloney. I don't think it's fair to anybody in this room that we have to make a decision that's forever. And it's not, right? And I think that's part of my reason for my opinion, is that there will be decisions about the project that are not made today. And you're not being asked to make them today.
Okay. Any other comments? Okay, let's vote. All those in favor of the motion to accept staff's recommendation and recommend denial of the Dickey Pit site specific, please say aye. Raise your hand. All those opposed?
Nay.
Okay. Motion fails. So now we'll entertain a motion to approve. I thought you were going to make a motion to approve, and then it would be subject to whatever amendments, for example, the staff
and
gave optional.
Is there another motion from the commission, correct?
Correct. That's why I said the other alternative
is to approve the staff report. In order to open discussion, mm-hmm. I move that we approve the staff report. We move to
adoption of
the
amendment.
Staff report.
Sure, use the mic.
That's what I'm trying to say. Denial of the staff report. You know what I'm trying to say.
Just a suggestion that would be to recommend adoption of the amendment as proposed with the following amendments.
I move to recommend adoption of the amendment as proposed with the following amendments.
With which following amendments is the part I think that you have
to. The amendments that we are about to discuss.
I think we motion to approve, and then you would make amendments to the approval motion, correct?
Correct. So okay. Main motion to approve.
Right, main motion
second,
to approve.
And then amendments to revise the main motion.
Okay. So you're willing to change your motion to adoption of the amendment as proposed in the staff report? And then once there's a second, it will open discussion. Then you can make, any individual commissioner can then make a motions to amend that underlying motion. Okay?
Sounds good.
So moved. Is there a second?
A second.
Okay. We have a second. Did you get that? Yeah, Galloway's second. I'm sorry. Did you get the action motion? Okay. We have a motion and second. Any comment or any amendments to the underlying motion?
I have a question.
Okay.
So what language are we talking about then? Pages 3 and 4 as they handed out this evening, or what conditions and findings are we talking about? Attaching to this question, to disagree with the staff.
In the staff report, there is a section that, of course, I don't have queued up. It's the if we choose to approve the rezone, the staff suggested some conditions.
So if I can suggest just a clarify procedure here, as I understood, the motion is to approve the rezone, which is just the map change, right? Changing the colors and the labels on the map, essentially. Mm-hmm. If you want to consider conditions on that approval, like those suggested in the staff report under the heading optional considerations, those would then be amendments to the main motion to adopt those conditions or other conditions that you want to consider tonight. And then there would be a vote on that amendment, right? And if, as you go through those conditions of approval and vote on those, once you're done with that, then you return to the main motion as amended for a final vote.
Okay. So someone needs to move to amend my motion?
Correct.
Correct.
And do you happen to have the optional considerations you can put up on the screen?
I can.
I mean, I have mine as a printout. I'm not sure if the other commissioners have.
So all the commissioners should have this handout that you're handed mm-hmm. tonight. This is just a very slightly revised version of what was in the agenda packet. The proposed conditions of approval are on page 3 and 4 of this packet. Okay. And at the bottom of the slide here is just a quick summary of what, let me, I guess, explain for clarity. What is here is what was in the staff report. As revised, the red strikeout and underlined sections are the revisions based on the comments that we received. So there are proposed changes to consider to these conditions of approval here. And they're basically come under four, they can be described as four areas of revision. And just to clarify, the first is to clarify that the right-of-way is to be dedicated within the site only. They can't be compelled to acquire right-of-way outside of the property they own. The second is to incorporate the applicant's offer to create an industrial zoned. An industrial zoned buffer area within their site, and what they were proposing with that is to retain an area within their property boundary that would remain zoned IND, the industrial zone. The fourth would be to update the conditions around airport compatibility, and part of this is related to more precise mapping around those hazard zones, and a proposal by the applicant to address within particularly the airport compatibility zone number 3, which is that turning area, the more hazardous area, that other uses like open space, recreation, stormwater, and other things that could be compatible could go there. And then the fourth change to consider to this would be to clarify that the fire and emergency services condition allow for, in addition to annexation, a contract for service and a no protest agreement. And there is in green highlighting a slight grammatical revision to what was in your packet that you received previous to the meeting on that page 3. So those are the four changes to consider to what was in the original staff report as conditions of approval.
So on number 1 that is crossed out, that is the agreement that they would not turn over that, they wouldn't rezone the areas where the Apex Airport is having the flight area over
it. So the original staff report was recommending, if you were to consider approval, to not rezone the two western parcels. And based on comment and additional information that was provided, the proposed change here to consider would be to allow the rezone of those parcels, but under the terms of the development agreement, do a compatibility consultation with the airport in WashDOT and develop what measures and requirements would be put in place on the site to ensure compatibility with the airport as well as adjacent industrial areas. So it extends the process of figuring out legislative measures into project specific measures, compatibility issues through the development agreement.
So I know the applicant, I'll use the term agree, regarding 2A, but I'm wondering under 2B, subsection 3, the 50-foot wide buffer, is the applicant agreed to the other criteria that's established here about the boundary line adjustment or a set aside as a special tract?
That was the applicant's proposal.
Okay, fantastic.
My only concern with that is that 50 feet is not very wide. If we're talking asphalt batch plant.
Right.
Oh, sorry, go ahead.
If I may, I think these this language takes a significant step toward addressing the compatibility issues with Apex Airport. I don't think they go far enough to protect the interests of the owners of the batch plant and rock crusher and the business to the south. And a 50-foot buffer, in given the difference in elevation, isn't going to, in my humble opinion, is not going to do very much to mitigate the noise of a batch plant that's smack dab on the south boundary of this property.
The applicant would like to comment. Or, is that a no?
So whether you want to invite the applicant to share something on this, that's your choice as chair.
Is that okay with you guys?
Yeah.
Okay, sure.
So I appreciate the process and the deliberations, and it is difficult. Also appreciate it. I'm sorry. John Johnson, resident here in Kitsap County for 36 years. And I've appreciated working with the county, Peter and Dave, to work through some of the conditions of approval that you're considering. So the thought has been, and we're not locked in on the 50 feet, we're willing to make that. I mean, one of the things about the market is if you're not successful, you're going to go bankrupt. And our company, 2008, had 18 projects. We never lost a project, never defaulted, never even missed a payment on a loan. So in business and in development, if you're doing something the market does not want to accept, then you don't stay in business. So the idea of the 50 foot or 75 feet, 100 feet, whatever that would be, is actually creating a berm. And and this is a large property. So let's say we take a portion of it and we don't develop it for housing and we build a berm that would be a very good buffer. That is the concept. Behind it, some of those properties that would be closer to the asphalt plant might be more affordable because until that plant is repositioned. But there are people living in that area. There's a brand new plant going right across the road from our property. And so I think it can be mitigated with some of the buffer ideas that we have. So the idea of building a berm is really what we'd like to do. So whether that's 50 feet or 100 feet or 150 feet, we're open to that. That's what our discussion with the county was, and that was what was agreed to. But, you know, we're trying to make this viable, and we're trying to create a win-win for this community and also reclaim this property, which is an eyesore. So
thank you.
So in response to Commissioner Svensson's comment in the applicant's statement, so 50 feet is a distance measurement, not a performance type of condition, right? And so if the 50 feet was my understanding was more specifically relevant to visual screening, right, as well as maintaining an industrial area so there isn't a residential zone immediately adjacent to an industrial site, and then triggering a further setback and other mitigation requirements on the industrial user. It was one of the intentions, right? So if there's what I think I'm hearing from you, Commissioner Svensson, is maybe a performance-based criteria or condition around impacts that would get worked out through the development agreement and CEPA process and so forth when the studies and other things can be done that specifically address those issues.
Yes. Are any of the staff here familiar with the current county noise ordinance, or do you work with it, any of you?
Somewhat familiar, yes. It's been reviewed for this application.
When it was first adopted, at least, it was structured so that the standards for different receiving areas changed. And if you had a noisemaker like a batch plant or a rock crusher, and you had industrial zoning around it, the standards were relatively low, but if you have intense residential development in close proximity, the standards of the noise levels that can be produced by the existing business would become more and more strict. Is that still the case?
Yes. So what I've put up here is a graph representing those noise limits for receiving areas. So so for example, this is a graph representing just a common industrial noise level, not specific to this site. This isn't based on monitoring data of this site. I want to be clear about that. And the three dashed lines represent the different sound receiving area sound thresholds that are in code. So the noise increases, the loudness of the noise increases as you go up in this graph, for example. So that top line is what an industrial site can receive as far as noise from an adjacent industrial site. And in this case, a rock crusher is reaching that threshold at about 1,000 feet. The orange line in the middle is what an adjacent commercial receiving area, it's a lower noise standard. And then the red line at the bottom is a residential receiving area. And so without any mitigation, this industrial standard for a rock crusher, that noise reaches that threshold at 3,000 feet away. With mitigation, again, just industrial best management practices, not specific to the site relative to elevation and other things, it might become compatible with that noise level at about 700 feet. So this is where site-specific information, monitoring, and studies would be needed in order to determine what mitigation measures are necessary and how effective they are. But yes, the noise thresholds are different. And so one of the policy issues here is our current code requires the mitigation to be on the industrial use, not on the adjacent residential area, right? So if you want this site to consider contributing towards mitigation of those impacts, then that's why there's conditions of approval here in a process in a development agreement to address that, because current code doesn't specifically address that.
Mr. Best, do you have the what was proposed on the zoning picture?
Yeah.
Or say drawing. The hatch mark at the bottom, green hatch mark, that's the existing industrial area.
The kind of green, with bluish green,
right,
is industrial. The hatch mark is the mineral resource overlay.
Okay.
That's on top of that.
So NC is non-commercial, UL is
urban low residential.
Urban low residential.
5 to 9 dwelling units per acre in yellow.
Mr. Chairman, if I may, it's my understanding that approval of this site-specific plan amendment will impose a more strict noise standard on pyramid materials. Has there been any effort to have a dialogue between the proponents and pyramid materials about their ability to comply with those tougher noise standards, or is this approval of this amendment and subsequent developments basically going to put them out of business?
So I can't speak to whether it'll put them out of business, but under current code, any improvements, their existing operations would not, their existing operations could be affected by noise. Certainly, any expansion of the mine would require appropriate mitigation measures. As far as discussions between the applicant and the mine operator, I think there's been something there, but to my knowledge, there hasn't been a direct discussion about, you know, we'll do these mitigation measures and you do those mitigation measures. I don't think they've gotten to that level. The idea with the development agreement would set up a consultation process, and requiring this applicant to consider mitigation for industrial impacts is beyond what code currently requires, but is supported by comp plan policy, right? So it's legally allowable and it's appropriate for legislative action, but it does kick kind of the details down the road.
See, and part of my thought of having that up was that if we place, you know, they're asking for residential and urban industrial,
neighborhood commercial, and
if,
urban low
if the neighborhood commercial was put against the south boundary next to the mining operation, you're not putting residentials right next to it, then you're getting that barrier away from, you know, having to create an artificial barrier. The further away the residential is from that area, then we're mitigating the you know, trying to figure out how we put houses next to a pit.
My understanding is that neighborhood commercial could potentially be a higher density residential area.
Right. So neighborhood commercial allows for a real diversity of uses.
Well,
townhomes, multifamily, mixed use, and commercial. So at this point, you know, unless you change, you know, the what's allowed in that zone, you know, you're potentially allowing all those different uses there, right?
So we still have our underlying motion to recommend approval of the amendment. Are there any amendments to the amendment, particularly to adopt the optional considerations?
I just have one question maybe for the applicant, if you don't mind. Item 2 puts a time limit on completing the conditions stated, which is a year from June. Is that enough time for you to address all of these items on this list? And if so, if not, does that then mean we revert back to the current zoning of today?
So I'll answer that part for you. So if this deadline doesn't change, and there's a provision here that allows the board to do that by resolution, but if it doesn't change, then as this is written, the maps actually stay the way they are until all these conditions are met. If they don't meet that deadline, then all of this goes away and the maps are never changed.
So I think the focus that we've taken with the county, and it's been mutual, as I mentioned, is using a developer agreement to address each of these issues specifically. So this process is really saying there is no market for, with the changes that have happened in the marketplace, there is not a market currently for the industrial zoning. And the only way this property is going to be reclaimed is to make it feasible market-wise to do something with it. And our intent is not, we're accepting the burden of making the buffer practical in a way that doesn't place the burden on the neighboring property. And we have reached out to that neighbor and we intend to do that. So, you know, I think through the developer agreement, we're going to be able to take each one of these issues, and during the course of this time frame, which is a relatively short, you know, June of next year is going to be here before we know it, but we, hopefully the county would say that we have been, we've taken the initiative where we've been able to do that and try to be responsive. And take the responsibility that we have to try to come up with solutions to some of these issues. And so within that time frame, we have the burden of meeting with neighbors, which we have been doing, of trying to find solutions to some of these issues. I think several of the commissioners have spoken to the fact that this is just the beginning of a process to take a piece of property that is really deserves to be reclaimed and also find a market that will accept the cost of reclaiming this property and restoring it, which we intend to do. And then working with the county through the developer agreement and working with the neighbors, and just what we've done suggesting that we put an industrial buffer on our property was intended to specifically remove the burden from the neighboring property. Now, I agree with Commissioner Swenson that with regard to a berm or whatever mitigation we do, and you know, making that burden our burden through the development process, through the developer agreement process, which is going to be engaging the county and the neighbors, we have just over a year to do the studies, come up with a proposal, and design the project in such a way that the market is going to accept the product at the end of the day. We're not going to be successful if we don't do this in a way that the market is going to accept. So we're willing to accept that challenge. There's a lot of property here to work with. So I think there's, you know, we can draw a circle around the asphalt plant, for instance. We've just generally thrown some concepts at it, but, you know, at the end of the day, it's going to be the developer agreement addressing some of these specific issues that will give shape to how this project at the end of the day looks. So I'm not sure I answered your question, but we're absolutely going to be taking the initiative to work with neighbors, accept the burden for fitting it into the community that's there, working with the airport, working with our neighbor to the south, and hopefully, you know, the county will continue to engage with us in that process. The conditions that we came up with were give and take on both sides, and I think that reflects our approach to this project, that we're trying to find a win-win for everybody, including the neighbors that are adjacent to the property.
Great, thank you.
Yes. Am I allowed to propose an amendment to my own motion?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I move that we amend my motion to, how do I say this, incorporate the optional considerations put forth in the staff report with an additional measure added to 2B3 to state that to add a requirement that the applicant create a plan for a noise and odor buffer that could take the form of a berm or industrial development. This is too complicated.
Can I give you a suggestion here?
Go for it.
What I would suggest is that we do a performance-based...
I would say that what we want is a boundary that is performance-based. However they develop it, we are not going to define that for them.
That's great. Yes.
Okay.
So, to restate, I propose that we accept the rezone with inclusion of the staff report optional considerations, with the addition to 2B3 of a performance-based noise and odor mitigation plan.
Okay, got that. Is there a second to the amendment?
Second.
Okay, we have a motion and second to amend the underlying motion. Any discussion about the amendment?
Mr. Chair, can I ask a clarifying question?
Sure.
Just to make sure I'm following along. Is your motion for the optional considerations as originally drafted in the staff report or as revised and presented tonight?
As revised and presented tonight.
Okay, good. Okay, any discussion about the amendment? Go ahead.
I don't know if this is the appropriate discussion, but I was thinking that we would also amend it to include a 100 or 75-foot buffer. I think we should increase that buffer. I don't think 50 feet is nearly enough. That's the length of this room, roughly. So I feel like we need a bigger buffer. Is that the appropriate place to do this, or? Well, I can add that.
Or is this discussion?
Yeah, it's discussion right now. Discussion on
it's,
the amendment.
It's discussion right now, right? You're proposing or you're discussing?
I guess I was asking if I could propose that or if we need to wait for this amendment to close.
The amendment is relative to the amendment to the underlying motion, so you could, as you suggest, do an amendment to the amendment to the motion. And good luck with the meeting minutes. Or if you want to, we could take action on this amendment, and then okay. You could propose a secondary amendment.
But we'll let's take action, and we'll see what
we sounds good.
Sorry. We're a bunch of new people up here.
Well, at least we get along. I've been here in meetings when the commissioners didn't get along. So. Any further discussion? Hearing none. All those in favor of the amendment signify by saying aye and raising your hand.
Aye.
All those opposed? The amendment passes. So the underlying motion is amended to approve adoption of the amendment with the optional considerations. Now, do you want to propose your amendment?
Yeah, I move to propose amending the amendment.
No, we adopted the amendment.
Okay. So I move to amend the optional considerations to B3A to read the applicant's proposal to provide an area at least 100 feet wide that will remain in the IND zone along with the site boundary, yada, yada, yada. Can't say that? How do you spell that? Hit the rewind button. I move to amend the amendment, optional considerations, item 2B3A, to read, the measures shall include the applicant's proposal to provide an area at least 100 feet wide that will remain in the IND zone along the site boundary with adjacent to any IND or MRO/IND zone. This area shall be created through either the boundary line adjustment or set aside as a special tract.
Okay. I'll second that. Okay, we have a second. Motion second to amend. That's an underlying motion. Is everybody clear on that motion? All those in favor of the amendment signify by saying aye, raising your right hand.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed?
Nay.
The motion fails.
Okay. Would you care to expand on your denial of or objection to the motion?
Right now, it's an arbitrary number. We put in the First Amendment. The proposal now is performance-based. So that means using best science and technology available, you develop a boundary that works. That's why I'm opposed to 100 feet. It 100 feet may not work. Or 100 feet may be 97 feet too much. It's arbitrary.
Under the performance base, we're happy to live with 100 feet. If it needs to be more than that, in some areas, we're willing to do that. And I think with the county and the neighbors' input, we can make those adjustments under the developer agreement.
Great.
with a performance space. So I appreciate what you're saying. You're saying let the science dictate actually what that buffer needs to be. And so we accept that responsibility to do that. So thank you very much.
Right, thank you. Are there any other amendments? Hearing none, back to the main motion. Any further discussion on the motion as amended? We haven't passed the underlying motion yet. We've amended it. We haven't passed it. All those in favor of the underlying motion of approving, I hate to restate that, but approving, recommending approval of the Dickey Pitt site-specific with the optional considerations and with, as you amended the additional order, sound in order, mitigation plan, site, aye. Raise your right hand.
Aye. Aye.
Was opposed. The motion passes 5-0. Congratulations. Yeah, sure. And thank you for sitting through our meeting, Mr. Johnson. I know you've got a fantastic reputation, and we appreciate you working with us. We are going to take a 10-minute break, 5-minute break, and reconvene in 5 minutes, 7:15. We'll reconvene at 7:20.